This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Douglas Impuga, and here is what's coming up.
With a local failed district attorney charging a former president of the United States for the first time in history on a basis that every single pundit and legal analyst said, there is no case, there's no case.
That was former U.S. President Donald Trump speaking on the 34 charges in an indictment against him. Also, we hear what people on the continent think of the case against Donald Trump, and cholera spreads in Mozambique. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. Former U.S. President Donald Trump has pleaded not guilty in New York to 34 felony charges of falsifying business records. Tuesday evening, Trump again denied the charges and attacked the New York prosecutor's motives.
Trump surrendered at a New York City courthouse, where he denied charges of involvement in a scheme to hide accusations of sexual misconduct by falsifying business records to hide payoffs to accusers, including a former adult film actor, Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg.
34 false statements made to cover up other crimes. These are felony crimes in New York State, no matter who you are.
Trump was greeted by supporters as he returned to Florida and was defiant in a televised address at his Mar-a-Lago resort, where he said the prosecutor was motivated by politics.
With a local failed district attorney charging a former president of the United States for the first time in history on a basis that every single pundit and legal analyst said, there is no case, there's no case.
But a grand jury of citizens voted to charge Trump, and one analyst says his attacks on the legal process will only backfire. Paul Schiff Berman teaches law at George Washington University. He spoke by Skype.
The case is going to be heard based on the facts and the law. And I also don't think it will help him in the main with the American people, because most Americans want the legal process to operate fully and fairly, even with regard to a former president.
People who gathered outside the New York courthouse were divided and passionate. Dion Cheney is a supporter.
I'm here to support my president, Donald Trump, the greatest president in American history, probably the best leader on planet Earth ever.
Jennifer Fisher is not a fan of Trump.
He's a con man, and he has a lot of people still fooled. Most New Yorkers he doesn't fool, but I hope they'll see the light.
Trump faces the unprecedented indictment while he remains a leading contender for the Republican nomination for president. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News.
Former President Trump called on his fellow Republicans in Congress to slash funding for the U.S. Justice Department and the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Republicans in the past have supported robust funding for law enforcement and have criticized proposals from some on the left in recent years to defund local police departments. During his presidency, Trump backed spending increases for the Justice Department and FBI. Trump faces two Justice Department criminal investigations. One focuses on efforts by Trump and his allies to overturn the results of the 2020 election, which he lost to Democratic President Joe Biden. And the other focuses on classified documents that Trump retained after leaving office. And you just heard Trump pleaded not guilty yesterday in a New York State court to a 34-count indictment. He is charged with falsifying business records linked to a 2016 hush money payment to an adult film actor in the first ever criminal case against a current or former U.S. president. The case is drawing international attention. In Africa, some public venues had television showing the live news of Trump's court appearance. In Nairobi, fashion stylist and writer Annette Nyanguthi says she was shocked to see the former president in court, but thinks it's an important event.
Good thing for democracy, because it shows no one is above the law. I think our leaders should take it as a lesson too. We've been singing about corruption for the longest time. Corruption and politicians thinking they're above the law. So having a a leader, especially from the U.S., arraigned in court is a lesson for us as Africans.
Ethane Okechi is an engineering student at the University of Nairobi.
And I think that Trump being arrested is quite surprising because a person of his stature and influence, it's very rare for him to be arrested. I think it's quite surprising and that the law can actually catch up to him if he is guilty. A move like that will surprise many African nations and probably inspire them to be like the U.S., like push the democracy agenda that anyone who is found guilty will be punished as per the law.
However, an entrepreneur named Lovelin in Port Harcourt, Nigeria, thought the indictment was a mistake.
My reaction towards the charging to court of the former president of America, Donald Trump, I was shocked, I was surprised, because I didn't see it coming. My reaction is I feel it's not necessary. The man is a good man. Even if there are reasons why he should be arrested, I think it's going to be sort of political propaganda, trying to tarnish his political image, and it's obviously obnoxious. I don't like it.
And in Johannesburg, accountant Litha Vuke doubts the case will go very far.
I do not think that the 34 felony charges are going to stand the test of time against Donald Trump. I think we have seen it so many times in history. Billionaires always getting away with crimes in the face of the law. But also the timing is very suspicious, which makes it highly possible that it could be Jordan's administration posing these threats on Trump. But like I'm saying, I don't think they will go anywhere, and we've just saw him. He pleaded not guilty in court.
For more on the case against former U.S. President Donald Trump, VOA's Chinedu Ofor spoke with Paul Schiff Berman, a Walter S. Cox professor of law at the George Washington University.
Well, these are serious charges. They are along the lines of what we expected, but in some ways a little bit more serious because they focus on a multi-incident conspiracy to silence not just Stormy Daniels, but two other people in the last days of the 2016 election. And we have both a financial crime, in which Trump is alleged to have covered up these payments, but also an election law crime under federal law, because these payments were illegally made in furtherance of Trump's election and his prospects. So these are serious crimes. They are not as serious as the two other investigations that are proceeding against Trump, both in Georgia and with the special counsel in Washington, D.C.
What stuck out to you during today's event?
I think what stuck out to me most was two additional hush money payments that were allegedly made through the National Enquirer and that were also covered up, which suggests that the prosecutors would like to prove or might be able to prove that this was a pattern and practice of Trump, Michael Cohen, and the publisher of the National Enquirer to silence all potential allegations of sexual misconduct during the last days of the 2016 election.
That was Paul Schiff Berman, a Walter S. Cox professor of law at the George Washington University, speaking with my colleague Chinedu Ofor from Chevy Chase, Maryland. You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA, radio and TV programs, and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. In Kenya, 2 weeks of protests against the high cost of living and alleged electoral rigging have been paused for bipartisan dialogue. Opposition leader Raila Odinga called yesterday for parties outside parliament to be involved in the talks, while President William Ruto favors negotiations only with the legislature. Odinga warned of fresh protests if the government does doesn't take the opposition's demands seriously. For more on the status of the talks, I reached VOA's Nairobi correspondent, Mariama Diallo.
Sometimes it looks like it's going well because after Ruto's speech on Sunday, you know, on Monday we saw movement. We saw some of the supporters being released, which was one of the conditions. And they talked about the reconstitution of the IEBC. There was also movement with that. So it seems like it was doing well. You know, he was trying to keep his promises. But then when you listen to the other side, you know, they go back and forth here and there because I think Mr. Odinga recently reiterated what he wants, his demand. So he still wants the high cost of living to be addressed. He's also asking the government to lower the cost of fuel and electricity. And he's saying that no committee is needed for this. It only takes the government to take the measures and implement them. The reason why he said no committees is needed for that is because I think the reform and reconstitution of the IEBC, the International Electoral and Boundaries Commission, electoral reforms, he said that that was urgent. And that's the thing that is being addressed in Parliament. That's the stuff that Ruto actually proposed that bipartisan group to deal with that. He's also talked about waiving the medical bills of victims of alleged police brutality, including journalists, also to compensate the families of those who lost their lives. But for balance, at least for the journalist side, I think we've heard the journalists that were injured were actually attacked and harassed by both sides. There was the police on one side and then by protesters and mobs on the other. And actually, speaking of the people, we know that three people had died. And speaking of the people who died today, was the burial of William Mayenga, the Maseno University student who died on that day, the first day of the protest. So you listen to Odinga, who talks about that. But then when you listen to Ruto, who was in Rwanda recently, he also kind of he still reiterates that the kind of last August elections were free and fair. He says that he's surprised that 5 months after that, that the opposition is deciding to claim that they were told by a whistleblower, for example, that the results were possibly different. And he's wondering, nobody has told him or his government why they think that the results are different.
Yeah. Talking of reforms at the Electoral Commission, one sticking issue is the audit of the election that Odinga is demanding.
Yes.
That
yes.
must be a tricky situation.
Yeah, he insists on auditing the 2022 election servers. He said that it's necessary and urgent and it requires forensic audit by experts. And I don't know if that's something that's going to be dealt with through that bipartisan group or that is it's going to be another group that's going to have to take care of that.
Mr. Odinga also insists in his remarks he wanted participants in these negotiations to include other people outside parliament. Is that
yes.
possible?
Well, he talked about that as well. I haven't heard from what I've heard on the government side, from Ruto's side, once he proposed that bipartisan group to be formed through parliament, that's where it was left. I don't know if they're going to extrapolate, you know, decide, okay, well, we have this bipartisan group, but then let's involve other people outside of parliament. And I think actually when I've spoken to a few people here and there, and some people think that the problem might need more than just parliament. They might need civil society. They might need, you know, other people, you know, just more voices to kind of try to resolve the issue. But those are also just, you know, people who are asking and, you know, their wishes, basically.
That was Mariama Diallo, VOA's Nairobi correspondent. She spoke with me from Nairobi.
VOA. VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1. Then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1. Then 202-258-3076. 3076.
Cyclone Freddy killed hundreds of people in February and March as it pummeled Madagascar, Malawi, and Mozambique. While the long-running storm's victims were mostly in Malawi, floodwaters in Mozambique have created a fresh threat there from cholera. Cases nearly doubled in 1 week to 19,000 amid a shortage of medical facilities, many of which were badly damaged by the cyclone, especially in the worst-hit province of Zambezi. Tom Gold reports from Zambezia's capital, Quelimane, Mozambique.
The neighbourhood of Isidwa, on the outskirts of Quelimane City in Mozambique's central Zambezi province, has reported the highest number of cholera cases. Most here lived in flimsy huts made of mud or bamboo that were flattened by the cyclone's up to 215 km per hour winds. The local health centre's building is no longer stable, so doctors and nurses work outside under the shade of trees. Mothers lined up patiently this week with their children for cholera treatment in one of the few wards that survived the storm. José da Costa Silva is the clinic's director. He says the staff are working at high risk because the roof could collapse at any minute. Cholera cases are increasing, says Silva, and the health centre does not have the capacity to treat everyone. He says most patients are referred to the provincial hospital. The outbreak is not confined to Quelimane City. The UN says more than 19,000 cases have been confirmed across 8 of Mozambique's 11 provinces. The World Health Organization's office has called it the worst cholera outbreak in Mozambique for 20 years. At Quelimane Provincial Hospital, the Director General of Mozambique's National Health Institute this week addressed health workers in a packed room under a torn roof with two gaping holes. Eduardo Sangulo Jr. tells the workers the cholera outbreak is getting more serious by the day. Confirmed cases in Quelimane district alone have reached about 600 a day, he says, but the real number could be as high as 1,000. Gudo Jr. says the disease is not localized to one neighborhood, it's everywhere. He says it can only be fought with a local chlorine water treatment product called Certeza, but supplies are stretched and there aren't enough people to distribute the bottles. Every day, volunteers collect crates of Certeza from outside the hospital and drive to neighborhoods like Isidwa, where they walk from house to house distributing bottles. Each one should last a family for a week, but demand is massively outstripping supply as the cholera spreads. For many Mozambicans still recovering in the cyclone's wake, cholera is just one of many problems. Outside the village of Nicodala, about 300 people live in a makeshift camp of tarpaulin huts on a road next to a flooded field. Their villages and fields are still underwater, forcing them to fish in flooded rice paddies to survive. 64-year-old Joaquina Bisani says she had to reach the camp by canoe after her village was submerged. Cholera is less of a problem here than malaria, she says, as the damp and heat has turned these flatlands into a breeding ground for mosquitoes. Bisani says they've received no support from the government, so they're supporting each other. The World Food Programme estimates the cyclone's floodwaters destroyed 215,000 hectares of crops in Mozambique. 70-year-old farmer Inacio Abdala says his family's homes and fields were among those destroyed. He says they eat one day and don't eat the next, as they lost everything in the floods. Abdallah says even the schools are flooded, so their children can't go to school. Even after the floods subside, salt water brought inland by the cyclone may have damaged much of the soil. Freddy hit just before the main harvest, and officials say it will take months or even years for farmland to fully recover, long after they hope to bring the cholera outbreak under control. Tom Gould for VOA News, Quelimane, Mozambique.
Gender equality activists in Namibia have welcomed the first ever appointment of a female justices to this country's Supreme Court. Vita Angula reports from Windhoek, Namibia.
The chairperson of the Namibia Women Lawyers Association, Ruth Herunga, said the appointment of three female judges, a first since the country gained independence, can be seen as the breaking of a glass ceiling. Herunga said although women have gained access to positions of political power, a significant number of African countries still lag in the representation of women at the highest levels of the judiciary.
It is now recognized that the contribution of women judges worldwide and their active participation at all levels of decision-making is essential to the achievement of equality and democracy. With this appointment, Namibia also joined the ranks of other countries, both on the continent as well as the world, who have in recent times already appointed women judges to the highest courts.
The country's Minister of Justice, Yvonne Dausab, welcomed the appointments but said more needs to be done in terms of representation because the top-tier leadership at both the Supreme Court and the High Court are still male-dominated.
We anticipate that over the next few months, you know, there's going to be a lot of cases that involves a variety of issues and also a variety of people. And you want to make sure that the bench reflects those demographics that people come from, so that people have confidence in the system.
An all-male bench of the Supreme Court of Namibia recently overruled a high court judgment in favor of a same-sex couple who were seeking citizenship for a child they said was theirs, born through surrogacy in South Africa. In that matter, High Court Judge Essie Shiming Chase ruled for the child to be granted citizenship. However, the highest court of appeal overturned that decision. Shiming Chase has now been appointed to the Supreme Court alongside High Court of Namibia Judge Johanna Prinsloo for a period of 1 year. Zimbabwean Constitutional Court Judge Rita Makarwa is the third new Supreme Court judge. Namibia's legal system allows for judges from other jurisdictions to serve on the country's high courts and supreme courts. Namibia, South Africa, Zimbabwe, and several other countries in the Southern African Development Community have similar systems and allow legal practitioners to work across borders as long as they are registered. Dilimeke Awala of the Namibia Institute for Democracy said these appointments will strike a balance in Supreme Court judgments.
Society and our processes only flourish with equal representation. Now, the female judges must be held to the same standards that we hold the male judges. They will be judges by how they defend the weak in society and speak truth to power. They have the chance to influence policy to improve an equal society.
Rita Makarwa's appointment has been questioned by opposition parties in Namibia because of her perceived closeness to the ruling ZANU-PF party of Zimbabwe. The opposition in Namibia accuses her of being complicit in the alleged rigging of elections in Zimbabwe. Female activists, however, argue that if she was a man, her fitness for the bench would not have been questioned. Vitalio Angula for VOA News, Windhoek, Namibia.
South Africa has revoked the national state of disaster that was declared in February to manage its electricity crisis. The policy gave the government additional powers to respond to power shortages allegedly caused by aging power plants and corruption in the state-owned company, power company Eskom. Reuters says the government's Energy Crisis Committee will now use existing legislation and contingency arrangements to reduce the effects of electrical shortages known as load shedding. The move also follows a court challenge against the state of disaster by OUTM, a non-profit group that fights government corruption. It said the regulations would have enabled mismanagement and abuse and that the crisis could be managed using existing laws. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Douglas Infoga in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent, 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbil Yeboro, and our engineer, Nashwan Kali, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays.